Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK Public Radio in Petersburg. It's Midday Magazine for Tuesday, the 21st of January, 2020. I'm Joe Vicknicki with the local news. The American Civil Liberties Union of Alaska says the state's financial regulator is chilling voices critical of Native corporation management. Now the Alaska Supreme Court is set to hear a case that could decide how much power the state has to police shareholders' speech. Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports.
Newspaper editor Deanna Hecker has worked at the Nome Nugget since 2003, and all letters to the editor pass her desk. So when she received one in early 2017, the paper printed it. It wasn't an endorsement of a candidate, which the newspaper prints as paid ads.
We don't want to end up with 50 letters to the editor endorsing the same candidate.
But this letter, it took aim at Sitnasook Native Corporation's election process.
And to me, voicing an opinion on process is exactly what letters to the editor are all about. That's, you voice your opinion, and I didn't think twice about it, because to me that falls under the First Amendment rights of free speech.
But the state's financial regulator sees it differently. The Division of Banking and Securities regulates Alaska's Native corporations, including shareholder elections. In fact, it's empowered to police online and written speech in a way designed to ensure fairness and transparency. And one of those ways is to require shareholders to file disclosures before making statements that could sway shareholders in an election. Now, the letter didn't name anyone, but after receiving a complaint, the state investigated and fined letter writer Austin Amasuk $1,500 and ordered him not to do it again. ACLU of Alaska's legal director, Stephen Kotev, says there are good reasons for states to regulate shareholder conduct.
Courts have almost universally agreed that these sorts of limitations are supported by compelling government interests and the interest in having fair and open elections among corporate entities.
But he says in this case, the state went too far. The gist of Austin Amasuk's letter was that shareholders shouldn't give their voting power to the majority board. The state claimed Amasuk's letter was misleading, something he denies and remains unresolved. But the legality of this case isn't over whether his letter was factual or not. It hinges on whether he should have filed a disclosure outlining his relationship with other shareholders with the division before writing in the newspaper. In a general statement, the division says its disclosure requirements are intended to promote fairness, truth, and transparency. No one from the state attorney general's office, which is representing the division, would talk on tape, but Assistant Attorney General Robert Schmidt wrote in a short statement that the state's interested in making sure proxy statements, as these ballots are called, do not contain material misstatements, so shareholders can have accurate information. The ACLU maintains that the state is using its corporate speech policing power too broadly. Kotev says it was the general leadership of Sitnasook Native Corporation that Amasuk took aim at.
And if the state is in the business of telling citizens or squelching citizen speech that is meant to criticize the corporate entity, then we have crossed the line and we are on our way well down that slippery slope.
In 2019, Banking and Securities received 27 complaints and issued enforcement orders against shareholders in 5 cases, 4 of which involved posts on Facebook. Now, this Supreme Court case is a legal fight between a state regulator and a civil liberties group. But a friend of the court brief, signed by former Attorney General Jonna Lindemuth, was submitted on behalf of 4 regional Native corporations. It backs up the state. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
And that case has oral arguments scheduled for this week. Petersburg's Borough Assembly tonight will start review of an ordinance that would raise rents and other service charges for residents at Mountain View Manor's assisted living facility. The move is an attempt to cut into an annual operating loss at that facility. In recent years, the borough's general fund has paid $150,000 a year to make up that operating loss in the nearly $1.8 million budget at assisted living. As proposed, some monthly rents would go up $75 the first year and another $100 each year for another 3 years. Service charges for different levels of care would also increase. The proposed ordinance also would add a 4th level of care at assisted living for residents who need total assistance with their daily life. That additional level of service was raised as a possibility by a consultant who looked at operations at the facility last year. The change requires 3 readings of the ordinance, and tonight's the first. If approved, those new charges would take effect April 1st. In other business, the Assembly will vote on a letter asking the National Marine Fisheries Service to leave out Southeast Alaska from the agency's critical habitat designation for humpback whales. Another letter asks the Alaska Department of Transportation to hold a public meeting in Petersburg on the Cake Road project. The state hopes to select a construction company as soon as next month for that work and begin construction on the project this year. And a third letter up for consideration tonight would thank the congressional delegation for continued payments to municipalities near national forest land. Also tonight, Borough Manager Steve Giesbrecht is asking the Assembly to appoint the borough's team for upcoming negotiations with employees. There is also a vote on a special use permit for accessing property on West Lansing Street. The Assembly also will consider the third and final reading of ordinances on a zoning change on the Scow Bay Loop Road and an update on borough law on traffic fines. That meeting starts at 6 p.m. tonight in Borough Assembly Chambers. It's a day later than normal because of yesterday's holiday. You can hear it broadcast live here on KFSK. The site of a vacant sawmill property in Wrangell could potentially be that city's next deep water port or industrial park. June Leffler toured the 38 acres that are on the market.
It may be the last of its kind in Wrangell, a massive privately owned waterfront property. It's the site of Wrangell's former lumber mill, about 6 miles south of downtown. When the mill was operating, it commanded a local payroll of $10 million a year. But these days, the only million-dollar amenity is the view.
I like bringing people out here because the view is phenomenal, even though we're having snow showers right now.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
Could you imagine coming to work and looking at this every day?
Terry Wenger is the real estate agent that's listed the property. She says when it first hit the market, there was skepticism within the community about revitalizing the site of the sawmill that closed in 1995.
I know when it first came out that we were doing it, it was just like, you know, everybody's like, yeah, right. But we are really doing this. And it is going to take us some time, but it is going to happen.
The former mill site is owned by 81-year-old Betty Bueller. She's the widow of Richard Bueller, who owned Silver Bay Logging that developed the mill. He died in 2016. Last March, Petersburg-based Anchor Properties listed the former mill for $2.7 million. Aside from the ocean view, there isn't much to see. There's the dock, there's a barge-turned-bunkhouse, and a few empty warehouses. Other than that, just plenty of open space.
I mean, the potential is anything.
Lisa von Bargen is Wrangell's city manager. The city has been interested in buying and redeveloping this land for years. There's been talk of using it for an industrial park for private businesses.
I'm sure there are things that the private sector might be thinking of or needs the private sector might have that I can't even comprehend right now, just because I don't know what those needs are.
The land is solid, no need for filling or grading, but there's no water or utilities. It would be expensive for any would-be developer to secure that kind of infrastructure. The Wrangell Assembly had been in negotiations to buy the mill property for much of last year. The talks ended in October after the Assembly decided it was too much for the city to take on at this time. Construction company owner Todd White says he's interested in making an offer. The Wrangell contractor says he wants to keep the mill site in the private sector.
And we're excited that Mrs. Bueller is stepping it up and putting it out on the private market.
He said the city already owns a few properties it could work on selling or developing before taking on another. The property is comprised of over a dozen lots, but the plan is to further subdivide those lots into smaller parcels. It could be the key to getting things moving. Wenger says she's aiming for 1 to 5 acre parcels.
It'd be different, like if one of the barge companies came out here, they need a lot of land. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have a welding shop, you don't need 11 acres for a welding shop.
Surveying work is being done, but so far no application to subdivide has been filed with the city. In the meantime, Wrangell's former mill property lies vacant. In Wrangell, I'm June Leffler.
Governor Mike Dunleavy named a new Office of Management Director yesterday. Juneau resident Neil Steiniger starts today, just in time for the first day of the legislative session. The position has had an acting director since Donna Ardoin left back in September. She drew a lot of criticism during her time with the administration. Critics often brought up that she moved to Alaska for the job. Unlike Ardoin, Steiniger is a lifelong Alaskan and has been with the Office of Management and Budget for several years. Dunleavy spokesperson Jeff Turner sent a written statement saying that Steiniger's experience in finance and state government make him a good choice to run that office. Petersburg High School's boys basketball team suffered their first losses of the season on the road in Metlakatla last weekend, while the girls team added two home wins. The Vikings lost to the Chiefs 51-44 Friday night and 43-35 on Saturday. In the first game, Rylan Wallace led scoring for Petersburg with 10 points, while Thomas Durkin, Brennan Skeek, and Gunnar Payne each scored 8 points. On the second night, Wallace had 12 points, Payne added 8, and Braden Larson scored 6. I spoke with boys coach Rick Brock about the Metlakatla games.
Anytime you play on the road, you have to show up and play for a majority of the game, if not all of it. And both nights, Friday night, we had 7 or 9 points in the first half. We were not playing very well. And Metlakatla's big, long, athletic, and we really had a hard time adjusting that. We had more turnovers than we had baskets made. It's a hard way to play on the road. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we struggled both evenings.
Their defense was that good?
It's different. They play their zone is a little different than what we've faced, and we've known it from the past. But then you add that in with their length and athletic ability, and then in our poor shooting, it's just a bad mix for the weekend.
Did anyone have a good weekend from your team?
You know, on Friday, I was happy with the way we bounced back. We were down 20-plus in the first half and came back and had spurts in the second half and had it down to 5 a couple of times and had the ball, weren't able to score. So our whole team's resilience for the weekend, I thought, was good. And then on Saturday, we shot the ball pretty well. We just kept giving it back to them too many times. Again, a 2-point game at the end, and we only had a couple of team fouls. So we had to foul, and they made their free throws, and things kind of got away from us in the last 30 seconds. But, Rylan Wallace played well. I felt both nights shot pretty consistent. I thought our post guys played well. There wasn't a good rhythm. All year we've had contributions from 6-7 different people. And that number was 3 or 4 each night instead of the full team effort. Metlakatla is good, and so you have to play. You have to give them your A effort if you're going to be successful.
Okay, you get a home series this weekend to stay home, huh?
Yeah. We haven't played at home since December 21st, I believe. So it'll be nice. Been a long 3 weeks on the road. So it will be nice to play here at home.
And it's Craig.
Yeah, we're playing Craig, the only team we haven't seen out of our region.
Know much about them?
They beat Metlakatla in Metlakatla, so our league, again, is one of those that if you don't show up to play, anybody can get anyone. So we hope just to play more consistent, get back to what we were doing up in Haines and up north, get back to playing our style of basketball, our brand.
Vikings are 8-2 on the season with a 4-2 conference record. Meanwhile, the Lady Vikings improved their record to 4-6 on the season, also with a 4-2 conference record. The girls beat the Mischiefs 54-44 Friday night and 33-28 Saturday morning. Kylie Simbahan led scoring for Petersburg in both games with 25 points Friday and 11 points Saturday. Inez Larson had 12 the first game and 11 points the second, while Shayla Maddoll chipped in a 9 points Saturday. I spoke with girls coach Dino Brock about those games. You guys are on a winning streak. How's that feel?
Always feels good to win some games. I thought that we played really well this weekend against a very good team. They've got some very good players, and I thought that we did a nice job containing them. Offensively, I thought, especially Friday, that we played well, running the floor, spreading the floor, moving the basketball, all the things that we've been talking about.
Able to score a little bit more Friday night versus Saturday morning.
Yeah, Saturday morning was more of a grinding game. There's a lot of fouls called. The game wasn't as smooth, wasn't as much up and down. So it was way more of a defensive battle. But those are the kind of games you got to learn to win, too.
Okay. On your team, who had a good weekend?
I think it was overall one of the things we've always been talking about is spreading the scoring out. So like the first night we had six different people that scored, and Saturday morning it was a little bit different. You could see it in the reflection of the score. We only had four people score. So for one of the things for us is that balance. You know, we might have different scores every weekend, but we've got to get that balance.
There were a lot of fouls in that second game, and not a lot of free throws made on either team, huh?
Yeah, which was odd because we've been shooting really well from the free throw line, as we talked about. And so, whatever it was, the Saturday morning, playing and then getting up and coming right back to the gym, but both teams struggled to shoot from the free throw line.
You guys should be used to the Saturday morning by now, huh?
You would think so, but it's hard. It's hard to just walk away from the gym and then come back, but it's also something you got to get ready for because it happens at tournaments all the time.
You got Craig on the road this weekend?
Yep, we head to Craig on Breakaway Friday morning.
You know much about them?
I watched some video. I think they'll be physical games. They run a lot of stuff similar to us or offensively. So we're going to have to control the pace, block out and rebound, which is something we're definitely going to work on all weekend or all week. So I think if we can do those things, that will really help us.
The girls play in Craig this weekend while the Vikings host the Panthers at home. For KFSK News, I'm Joe Vicnicki.